From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, we're moving closer to a new deadline on tariffs. We'll discuss what that could mean for Illinois, and political jockeying is already underway. A statewide office holder said this week she will not seek re-election next year, so we'll talk about that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus, and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. And Charlie's also been a longtime Statehouse reporter and observer. Our guest this week is Greg Hines, a columnist with Crane Chicago Business. And Greg, it's always good to have you back on the show.
Nice to be here, Sean.
So Greg, talking tariffs, let's start there. These have been on again, off again for months. It's got to be difficult for some businesses to figure out what's happening. But where do things stand with this August deadline that the president has discussed so far? What are you hearing out there?
I'm hearing the same thing you are. It might come, it might go, it might be changed. I mean, Donald Trump on tariffs is about as predictable as a teenager's mood. I mean, he's always all over the place. So far, and this is why the stock market has been relatively restrained in its reaction, so far he's been more huff and puff than actual action. He's threatened and he's beat his chest or whatever, but when the dust settled, the deals that have been announced call for increases, but they're relatively modest, are in the 10-15-20% range instead of the 70-80% or more that he's been talking about. But who knows? And complicating it is that the president has added in a bunch of non-tariff factors into the mix. For instance, in the case of Brazil, where he's threatened with a big increase, he wants him to, in effect, drop prosecution of his buddy, Bolsonaro, the former president, who is a friend of his, and he says was mistreated. But all this makes life really difficult for businesses. You talk to almost any business guy, and they'll say, hey, let us know what the rules are, let us know what the circumstances are, and we'll deal with it. We'll set our prices and hire accordingly. But this unpredictability tends to create stasis. People kind of freeze in place and say, we're not going to hire, we're not going to expand, we're not going to do anything. We need to find out what's going on. So far, it hasn't really bitten because the president keeps backing off the so-called taco effect. But who knows? We're kind of been on the edge of a precipice here for some months. Maybe we'll fall off. Maybe we'll get off it. Only Donald Trump knows.
When he first started talking about this back in the spring, or really pushing on it, this was something that caused the stock market to have quite a bit of jitters. But markets have been roaring back since that time. Is it what you said there? Maybe the feeling that A, he's not going to follow through with this, or B, that these are not going to be as bad as maybe first thought?
There's a little bit of that. It did roar back, but the last couple of weeks it's been kind of plateaued again. It's at new highs, but just barely and not moving. They're waiting to see. I think the smart money is betting that he's going to continue to back off, but nobody knows for sure.
Charlie, Trump has talked about the amount of money that's being brought in from tariffs, and certainly the government has seen a windfall from these tariffs. At the same time, the question is, who's paying them? Maybe it's not quite the consumer just yet. Maybe maybe a lot of companies are waiting before they pass some of these costs on. But if they all go into effect, that can't continue forever. And so this does become what Democrats have used as a talking point, as a tax increase.
Yeah, basically that's the thing. I mean, it's not the manufacturer overseas who pays it. They sell it to somebody in this country, and the price includes the tariffs as a tax. And then the business here in the U.S. isn't going to say, oh, out of the kindness of my heart, I'm just going to eat this added cost and not pass it on to the consumer, because most businesses can't operate that way. So obviously it gets passed on to the consumer. And the consensus of the opinion among experts is tariffs will drive up prices for consumers as the higher cost of imports will be passed on to them. And some places have stockpiled inventory to try and get ready for tariff price hikes. There was a toy store up in Chicago that bought in a whole bunch of stuff, and they were storing it in their basement. I think some of it they took home and stored in the basement at home, so they have plenty of supplies for the Christmas season that they'll hope they're hoping that they'll be able to sell those at a lower price than their competitors, who are going to have to buy stuff and pay the higher costs to the producers because of the tariffs. But this notion that somehow or other this money doesn't get passed on to us, that's just goofy.
And Greg, you'd agree with that?
I do, Sean. I mean, I understand where the president is coming from. One of the things that has clearly driven his rise in politics and just roiled the country for years is been the hollowing out of our old industrial base, where jobs that used to be, you know, good factory, well-paying jobs here that have moved to Mexico and China and whatever because they can underprice us. And I understand he wants to bring some of that back, but putting Humpty Dumpty back together again is easier said than done. And there's clearly a cost. And, you know, we're going to have to wait and see what he's done, just how much has gone up. The prices are going to go up. The question is how much. We'll see how many businesses come back and onshore stuff. There's been a little bit happening in recent weeks, but some of that may be for show. But this is clearly a huge and potentially very risky experiment with all of our livelihoods, because we all buy stuff, and, you know, and taxing everything. Like, why do you want it? Why do you want to tax, for instance, put a big tariff on cherries from Chile? We don't grow very many cherries in this country in January and February. Some of it just doesn't make sense, but the president loves this stuff. I have the same doubts Charlie does that it's going to work out. But this is definitely something that's still in progress.
Charlie, the governor this week issuing an executive order. It seemed to be kind of a rare step to discuss more about. The governor issued an executive order this week that seemed to be, I guess, a little bit of a warning shot about tariffs. What did you make of what the governor did?
Well, I think in a sense it was political in terms of warning people that these tariffs are going to disrupt things for us. And he's also, I think, trying to get ahead of the game in terms of figuring out exactly what the impact would be. For example, one of the things that he wants the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity and the Department of Employment Security to figure out the industries and regions of the state that are going to be most vulnerable to trade disruptions as the blanket tariffs go into, if in fact they do go into effect next month. He wants the Department of Public Health to figure out which medical supplies might be affected by supply chain disruptions. Human Services will do the same kind of analysis to find out what kind of food assistance programs. So he's looking at different segments. And one of the things that, and this is maybe being facetious, but it occurs to me, one of the countries, as Greg mentioned, that we're going after is Brazil, because Trump is really buddies with their former authoritarian leader. And so we're going to have huge tariffs on Brazil imports. I'm pretty sure Brazil is a pretty major source of coffee beans. The price of a cup of coffee might go up. And on the other hand, and this is being sarcastic, maybe with global warming, pretty soon we'll be able to grow coffee and bananas in central Illinois.
Greg, Charlie talked about this maybe more of a political move, because it seems to me the governor could order his agencies that are under him to do this without making a big show of it, but he did that with an executive order.
You mean Governor Pritzker's acting political? Just perish the notion. Of course it's political. One could argue that this is a reasonable exercise, I suppose, in the sense that he wants to let the people and industries and employees and all that know that he's on the case and he's trying to deal with it. It isn't just an effort to promote himself.
Before we leave this topic, Greg, what do you think is, I mean, I don't want you to have to predict what's likely to happen, but let's say these tariffs go into effect at a smaller rate than maybe people had first feared, and we live with this for a while. I mean, it's going to slow economic growth, I would think, in the state of Illinois. And that creates a lot of problems going forward for a state that still has a lot of needs and a lot of demands when it comes to its fiscal responsibilities.
It does, but the question is how much. The thing about pain is if you threaten, you know, I'm really going to clobber you out, and oh my goodness, you're going to be in agony, as opposed to, well, you're going to limp a little bit, but you're still going to get along. People tend to get used to pain. So, for instance, if Europe decides to put a big tariff on imports of Illinois soybeans, that's clearly going to have an impact here in Illinois. But is it going to be a 5%, a 10%, a 20%? That depends on what Trump does. A little bit of pain, people are pretty good at adapting. A big pain is more difficult. Where that magic figure is, I just don't know, and it depends on what's going to happen.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, along with Charlie Wheeler and Greg Hines with Crane's Chicago Business. Well, there was some political news that happened this week when it came to the state comptroller, an office that doesn't quite get a lot of political news coming from it, and that's the comptroller Susana Mendoza, Democrat, been there a long time. She's announced she's not seeking another term, but does not mean she's done with politics. So, Greg, I mean, there's a lot of rumors out there she's going to run for mayor of Chicago. She's done that once before unsuccessfully, but is that your take on things?
Yeah, I think I'd say the odds are she hasn't done it until she's done it. I think she's very clearly looking in that direction now. Every poll taken in memory shows that Brandon Johnson, the incumbent, is in a very weak position. When you're in a weak position, people tend to line up to get against you. I think she's clearly toying very heavily with this. We'll see if she turns out to be a better candidate than she was last time. She kind of got hobbled by the Ed Burke scandal. She was close with the former alderman, which kind of broke when she was running last time. She also isn't a very good fundraiser. She's clearly trying to position herself. What I find is kind of interesting is the byplay here between her and another statewide official who's also clearly tying with running for mayor. That's Secretary of State Alexei Giannoulias. Alexei looked at the calculus a little bit different. He decided that, well, I'm going to run for my current job. I'm going to keep it again. And if I run for mayor, then I'm going to have to answer some questions. But I'll deal with that then. It's not a big deal. She read the calculus a little bit differently, and maybe she just is tired of being controlled. It's not the world's most exciting job. But how the two of them interact is going to be really interesting, because I can't think of another occasion in which two elected statewide officials both run for mayor of Chicago at the same time.
And Charlie, your thoughts on Mendoza? I mean, she has been somebody who has, despite a position in Illinois dealing with the state's finances, it's not one that always garners a hot lot of headlines, but she has been pretty out in front because of some of Illinois' fiscal troubles through the years. And she's kind of made herself into being this fiscal steward, about paying the bills on time, things like that. So she has probably made the most she can out of that office if she's got bigger political ambitions, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. And she's been very critical of Mayor Johnson on some of the financial stuff. She had an op-ed in the Trib not too long ago saying that Johnson is pursuing a reckless fiscal course for Chicago Public Schools. She's also complained that it's time for the mayor to realize he doesn't work for the CTU anymore. He works for the taxpayers. She criticized the mayor for his $830 million bond issue, saying that this is a short-sighted cash grab, a scam on taxpayers. It needs to be stopped. And so she's not only been a good steward of Illinois' finances. I mean, she came in when Bruce Rauner was the governor, and his anti-union stance pretty much wrecked the state's credit rating and wrecked its financial condition. And she has advocated for more money in the rainy day fund. And she oversaw paying down of like $17 billion of outstanding bills. And so, as a matter of fact, right at the end of the fiscal year, she sent out a news release saying that all our bills are now paid on time. And that was at the beginning of July. So, yeah, I think she would be a very formidable candidate, and she's got the fiscal credentials, and I'm not sure who else is going to get into the race as we get closer. Janulius may or may not. And as a matter of fact, Mendoza kind of took a swipe at Janulius when she said she wasn't going to run for comptroller. She said something about how she's not going to run for two offices at once. And when she decides what she's going to run for, that's what she's going to run for. And of course, Alexei is running to be reelected Secretary of State. And if he is, then to run for mayor, he would have to abandon that position midway through his term.
Well, a name that's familiar to a lot of state government followers is Paul Vallis. And Greg, is the likelihood he's going to run again? He certainly hasn't been quiet since losing the last election.
He hasn't been quiet. He's kept up a steady stream of op-eds and position papers and whatever. But I think if Paul were to approach the political pros and say, should I do it again, the verdict would be almost unanimously no. He had his shot against an unknown in Mr. Johnson, and he absolutely blew it, even though he had lots of money. I like Paul. He's a friend. He kind of knows government, but sometimes in politics you just have to know when it's time to let the next generation take their shot. If Paul were to run this time again, I think he'd largely be a distraction rather than a major force.
You mentioned Mendoza needs to be a better candidate than she was last time. What do you think? You mentioned Ed Burke, too, in there, but what else did she not do well enough you feel that she needs to improve on?
She needs to articulate a vision and that's different from the rest of the field, which is going to be a little bit easier now because she's running against a guy who has an incumbent, and she's got to be prepared a little bit to float with what comes. In all campaigns, there are dark moments. It's part of the policy, part of the drill. Somebody comes up with something negative, something hits you from left field, and you have to be able to survive it and move on. I'm not sure she's thrown that degree of resilience yet. We'll see. She can be a little bit temperamental sometimes, like a lot of candidates, but you learn to deal with it. There's certainly potential there. I agree with Charlie. She can be a very engaging campaigner. She's got good issues. She's done a good job as controller. She's going to be part of a bigger field where, her main goal is going to have to be to distinguish herself and say, why me? Because if you have a field of, I'll say, 10 people, just to pick a number out of the air, the secret is you have to get into the runoff, which means you need to get probably 20%, 25%. That's got to be her goal. That's got to be her what she aims for. Can she do it? Yes. Will she do it? Too soon to tell.
Yeah, Charlie, it's a lot different running for Chicago mayor than it is pretty much for any other mayor job in the state, pretty much any other political office, because you have to, as he was saying there, as Greg was talking about, you have a crowded field to try to get you into that runoff. You have to have factions that will come out and support you. It's difficult. It's more difficult than I think people may realize to just to get enough support to get to that last point. And then, of course, you have to still not alienate people who can come over and vote for you.
Yeah. And I'm not all that well-versed in the ins and outs of Chicago politics anymore. But you have to deal with the different parts of the city. And the city is very diverse. And if you think about some of the bungalow belt, that's almost like suburbs. And then you look at some of the inner city, the problems on the west side and on the south side. And you look at the gentrification that's going on in some of the former working class neighborhoods that are being transformed into sort of, what's the pejorative term, these yuppie paradises. So it's a lot of different constituencies that you have to appeal to. And you have to be able to deal with the ward leaders, the Democratic leadership. And so it's a real challenge. But I think Mendoza has a lot going for her. She's got an outstanding record as comptroller. She's also a Latina, which will appeal to a large portion of the city. It has, I think, something like a third of the population in Chicago is Hispanic. So I think she would be a very strong candidate. Of course, we don't know who else is going to be there. But the one thing I feel pretty confident in saying that nobody, no Republican will come anywhere near getting elected mayor of Chicago.
Well, let's talk about the U.S. Senate race. And Greg, since we have you on here, this has been something we've been following for at least several weeks now as different people have jumped in. We have two sitting Congress people, including Raja Krishnamoorthy and Robin Kelly. And then we have the Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton on the Democratic side there. They're all running in a primary. How do you see this shaping up?
This could be a pretty good race, Sean, depending on how things check out, because each of the candidates has something to be said for them. Ms. Stratton, her main claim to fame, I think, right now is that she was J.B. Pritzker's lieutenant governor. She developed a record there. Pritzker, by all indications, is going to help her. How much he can do directly is limited by federal election contribution laws, but he could fund a PAC, for instance, a super PAC that could go after her opponents and be of help to her. And he certainly has a statewide organization that, by all indications, has been turned over to her. What holds her back, her liability, is like all lieutenant governors, she's just not very well known. Even now, I don't think most people, if you ask the average voter, who's Juliana Stratton, they kind of roll their eyes at you. They don't know. She's got to introduce herself to the people of Illinois. She's got to do it pretty quickly. Mr. Krishnamoorthy also he's well known in his congressional district, his advantage is he's a fundraiser. He's a huge fundraiser. As a matter of fact, his critics could say that's about all he's done in the last 10 years is raise money. He's got millions and millions and millions of dollars to spend however he wants. He started to do that. He went up with a pair of TV ads this week in which he kind of went after Donald Trump and suggested he's the Democrat who can bill the guy with the orange hair. Whether he has the policy chops, how well he can set up to attack, we'll wait to see. Then there's Congresswoman Robin Kelly, who in some ways is the most interesting. She and Governor Pritzker, frankly, have not gotten along very well. When she was state party chairwoman of the Democratic Party, he tried to get rid of her. They just don't get along. She's kind of a moderate. She's got a decent record in the House. She's got a little bit of money, but the question is whether she's going to be able to raise the kind of dough to compete. But I can give you a scenario where any of the three of them win. But, it's interesting. For those who want to consider demographics the big factor here, and you have two black women and one Asian guy. How that plays out among Illinois Democrats, hard to tell, but there's certainly a path there for Krishnamoorthy if the two women split the African American vote and split the female vote.
Yeah, Charlie, it's been a long time. Maybe I'm not sure if I can remember a time where you had three current high level office holders, people that, like Greg said, may not be that well known, but probably should be known because two are members of the congressional delegation and another one is the sitting lieutenant governor, all running in a primary against each other. So it has the makings of really being something to watch here, wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah. One of the things I found interesting, Krishnamoorthy came out with his first TV ads a few days ago. And one of the things he pointed out, and here's a quote from it says, "Growing up with a name and a background like mine, I always felt like an underdog, and I still do." He's from Schaumburg now, but he moved from New Delhi, India, when he was 3 months old. He was raised in Peoria. And he says, "As your senator, I'll take on the biggest bully of them all, because underdogs, we just fight harder." So the fact that he's stressing his downstate roots, I find interesting. Because, as a matter of fact, the way things stand now, and I will add that, again, this is a seat that I've not heard any serious Republican express interest in it, and I think whatever Republican run for it will get creamed. But when Dick Durbin leaves office, his successor will be someone from the Chicago area, and it'll be the first time since, 1980, that at least one of our senators, one of our U.S. senators, is not from downstate. So it's been like a 45-year stretch of having at least one downstater.
It's even more extreme than that. Depending on who wins the controller's race to succeed Mendoza, there's a Chicago state representative, Margaret Croak, who's running. And depending on who wins the Senate seat, the entire statewide Democratic slate could all be people who live in the city of Chicago.
And Greg, is there anybody, Greg, that you're hearing just real quickly here on the Republican side who might get into this race?
There's talk. The most talk I've heard has been Richard Porter, the Republican committee woman, state's national committeeman. Charlie is right. The state is very blue right now. Trump is not very popular here. It's uphill battle, so the question is whether somebody wants to fall on their sword. And there was a little speculation back about Congressman LaHood. I don't think that's going to happen. Why would he want to give up a pretty safe seat for an almost certain long shot loss for the Senate?
All right, time now for our notes from the field. And Charlie, we'll start with you this week.
Governor Pritzker is asking lawmakers to give the state more authority to regulate homeowners insurance in Illinois. And that's after the State Farm has announced that it's raising premiums for residential property insurance by an average of 27%. And Pritzker is suggesting that that's in response to the damages that State Farm has incurred in other states, for example, the flooding down in Texas. And he wasn't specific about what he wants the legislature to do, and he wants it to happen in the veto session. But consumer advocates have been saying that the state should have the authority to review and even reject these proposed rate hikes. Now, the State Farm argues that the increases were directly related to weather-related disasters in Illinois. And one spokeswoman said that they paid out more than $638 million in hail damage last year. So this is another thing that's going to be very popular for Pritzker going forward, because nobody is happy with the kind of home insurance increases that they're getting.
All right. And Greg?
Here in Cook County, the property tax bills for the second half of the year should have gone out, should have been due July 1st, so we don't even have them yet. No indication yet when the bills are going to even go out. It would look like they'll be due September 1st, maybe. That has huge political implications, because this year, the city of Chicago was reassessed. A lot of Chicago homeowners are going to get a lot of very bad news when their property tax bills do arrive. And that's right around the time that Mayor Johnson is going to be trying to present a new budget that fills a $1 billion hole. And he'll almost certainly going to want some property tax increases to do that hole. You add that together, and it's pitchfork time.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Greg Hines with Crane Chicago Business. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.